morning, folk out there. This is the Converted Mets fan, Sam Maxwell, and you are here with the Metsian Podcast. We're coming at you live from a few different places. I, myself, am in Manhattan, Hell's Kitchen. We're coming at you live from Connecticut with Rich Spirago of Connecticut, and we got Mike in Bensonhurst with us. We're all over the tri-state area here as we come at you with our first spring training special of the 2019 season. Gentlemen, we will, let's get right into it. Baseball is in the air. Rich, how you doing?
I am doing well for that exact reason, Sam. To me, you know, because I love the NFL as well, and so last Sunday and this Sunday were the only two Sundays other than the week between the championship games and Super Bowl without baseball or football. And it's over, man. You know, after today, we're at baseball kicking in. There'll be baseball on TV every Sunday for the next 7 or 8 months, and it's a wonderful feeling. I'm feeling great.
So, Mike, today we got our first taste of Jacob DeGrom on the mound, and he was pitching two Mets batters. That must have been quite the experience for some of these minor leaguers who hadn't taken pitches all spring long. I mean, all winter long.
I'm sure they feel like they're better off on his side than opposed them. A good day nevertheless. Spring training is here. For me, it's just a flip of the day, another day in the calendar. Baseball never stops for me. I follow winter leagues. That just wrapped up days ago, so I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready to get into it, too. I could definitely use the distraction and as well. It's weird at this point in my life. Everything kind of feels detached, and I know that I need to get – somehow, some way, Rich, back into baseball in my own way for my own good.
Well, you know, and this winter, I don't know what your perception is, Mike and Sam, but to me this winter, this off season has gone by very quickly. And I think the reason for that is that the Mets have been in the news a lot. I mean, a lot more than usual. And you had that sense of connection with them. I mean, they're always doing something, you know, whether it's the Cano trade, you know, which you could like it or dislike it, and all those other things they've done. They've made a bunch of moves to add depth that we'll talk about later, but they're always doing something. And it feels like they never really went away. So I'm ready. I think it's been a short off season, and I'm ready to go. I'm connected.
Do you know who's not connected at all is Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Mike, I think I'm going to start a little broadly over here before we get really deep into spring in Port St. Lucie. I'm kind of still shocked. I mean, I know this has happened before, but, you know, I think this is a complete conspiracy theory right off the cuff, right off the top of my head. But do you think the MLB knows that the fact that they're talking about – we're still talking about Bryce Harper and Manny Machado not in any other team right now actually is news unto itself and people are talking about baseball that way?
Well, if there was a private agreement amongst them, they're in big, big trouble. That's collusion. I remember 1981 when they went on strike. I remember in the mid-'80s when Peter Uberoth was commissioner. And he made a mild suggestion to the owners, you know, you guys need to be a little bit smarter about what you're doing. But like I said, they had that little cocktail meeting and decided to go against the players in the union, et cetera, et cetera. That was a huge mistake on their point. This time around, I don't think there's collusion going on. I just think that the minds of baseball have gotten smarter and – Mike, actually, I'll give credit to Michael Kay on radio for saying this, that the analytics have just caught up to the finances of the game, and what they have come up with, you know, just totally goes against the money that these guys are making. And I think they're finally putting their foot down and they're just being smarter. You can't accuse or you can't convict anybody for being smart. You understand? So it's tricky. I totally expect a backlash from the players insofar as going on strike and try to combat this and try to change the landscape of baseball with regards to arbitration and free agency eligibility and this, that, and the other. So this is definitely going to be two Rams bumping heads or butting heads or colliding, whichever which way you choose to put it. But it's not going to be good. And like in The Godfather, they say, yeah, every cycle often we go to war, it cleans out the bad blood. Well, we're going to see what happens. But I don't think this is collusion. I just think this is a bunch of smart people who are finally saying these salaries, there's just no justifying these salaries for what we get in return. You'll see that the history of 10 years, 7 and 10-year contracts works against ownership almost every time, almost every time. But I remember when George Steinbrenner gave Dave Winfield a 10-year contract. That, for the most part, worked out. But that was back in the 80s. And then a preponderance of these contracts was given out during, in the midst of the steroid era when these guys were loading up and staying on the field and being productive into their late 30s and, 40, 41, 42, unlike the natural course of this, of a career. And you're seeing that where length of careers are contracting again, and guys are getting hurt and they're having to retire from it. And there's just not, look what happened last year with the Red Sox. Just 2 months into the season, their manager Alex Cora told the Red Sox, "You know what? Hanley Ramirez, cut him, eat that money because he's a hindrance to it." And that's exactly what happened. And he's still unemployed. And look at these guys who still haven't signed. Not collusion, just very, very smart. And don't forget, Bryce Harper got or received an offer for $300 million over whatever it was years, but the offer was there for his taking, and he refused, looking to get more. So there's something said about the agents, the players, and the ownership in this regard. Sorry to go on so long.
No, it's okay. Where was that offer from again? Do we know?
I'm sorry?
Say
that again? For Bryce Harper? That came from the Nationals, from the get-go.
I just wanted to make sure. Right.
Yeah.
So, Rich, do you think it's just also strategy? Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are being talked at as individuals. Do you think that's a good thing for their brands?
Well, probably not. And you could look at it. Mike, I know you probably both relate to it. Probably Mike, because Kiner used to talk about this all the time back in the 70s. That whole thing with Branch Rickey, when Kiner came to him after having a great year, and Branch Rickey said, "Well, you're going to get the minimum possible because we came in last with you, we can come in last without you," and so that same philosophy to a degree about that individual branding thing, it's a double-edged sword, because if you're Bryce Harper or Manny Machado and you want to say me, I'm the guy, I'm a great player, which they both really are. Somebody could throw it right back at you and say, "Okay, Bryce, well, help me understand this. You were surrounded by really good players. I mean, you were surrounded by Ryan Zimmerman and the pitching staff that they have there with Strasburg, and Scherzer and Gio until this year, and all those guys. And you never won anything. You never made it past first round. So if you're going to brand yourself as some kind of a savior, show me some evidence of where you've done that." And Machado with the Orioles, it's like, the Orioles in 14, they won the first round of the playoffs, but then they got bounced and never made it out of the LCS. Didn't make it to the World Series with Machado. So if you're going to say that if you take me, you'll win, what? The other teams had you for a long time and never won. So anyway, and I personally don't buy into that. I don't buy this thing, that you can fault one person for not winning. But if you're going to brand yourself as a singular savior, a singular difference maker, it's going to come right back at you, especially if you're those guys. Your teams haven't won. It's that simple.
Yeah, and I don't know whether, and hopefully maybe one of you can help me out here, whether – has anybody ever exited the first round as often as the Nationals in a row? I mean, they're basically, you could argue that they are the division series Buffalo Bills. Rich?
I agree. I agree. I don't know that I agree with your point. I don't know that anybody has been bounced as often from the first round as the Nationals have. I'm going to venture to say no one has.
I guess you can know. I mean, like Oakland A's, Minnesota Twins, but consistently, literally in a row, the way the Nationals can? Because the blip is the Mets and the Braves last year.
I can't imagine that that's been the case. So many years in a row. Because if you think about it, they made the postseason, I think, in 13, 14, 16, 17. So that's 4 out of 5 years and got bounced in the first round every time. So, yeah.
And got bounced in 12, of course. So
yeah, exactly.
Well,
so there you have it.
So there you have it. And moving on to the Mets. Imagine if all of a sudden with Tim Tebow and Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard there and Michael Conforto and Robinson Cano and all these other stars. Mike, one more time before we get to some realistic stuff. Imagine if Bryce Harper just walked into Point Sports St. Lucie. I still can't wrap my head around how much money the Mets would make immediately with all the buzz around the nation about the fact that they're the ones who ended up signing Bryce Harper. It's just, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
The upper deck would pay for his salary. I keep on saying it. It would be great. It would be stupendous if he walked into spring training ground. But that's not going to happen. And I think the Jacob deGrom negotiations is evidence of that. I think the Mets' hand is being exposed here. I don't want to transition prematurely, but, you know, if we can't get through this, well, I don't feel we have any business speaking of Bryce Harper, even if it's in a, you know, joking manner.
Rich, I was talking with somebody on Twitter who thinks it's a terrible idea to sign Jacob deGrom long-term since he's 31. He's making $17 million right now. And they're probably going to be out of it by the middle of July, and you can just trade them. What do you say to that?
Wow. That's an interesting one. How did that all come about in this Twitter conversation? I missed it. So how did that all come together? I want to hear some of the backstory.
Well, I'll go find the mention while I look at it. Real quickly, of course, what I'm seeing now on Twitter is that, the Phillies to Bryce Harper to Phillies is heating up.
It is.
But,
yeah.
You know, we don't. Yeah. Which makes perfect sense since it's been the way for a long time. So I will find that. But yeah, like what do you think of that? And I will get you the entire. It's, ironically, it's Mets Nostradamus, GKR fanboy.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know what?
Not Metrodamus. Mets Nostradamus.
Right.
Who will be on later in the show.
He will in about 15, 20 minutes. So I know that he believes that as well. I mean, our own Metrodamus is joining us shortly. He was a big fan of, you know, signing Bryce to, if he let his market readjust, sign him to an absurd amount of money for 1 year, and yes, you do have the option to trade him in the middle of the season if the Mets are not going anywhere. So what would be the real investment? You know, the investment would be if you gave him 30 for one season and, you know, come August, you weren't going anywhere, and you find somebody to take the salary, which I think most teams would, you're out 20. Like Mike said, you fill the upper deck, you sell a bunch of shirts. But you know what? That's logic talking, right? But stuff like that doesn't happen. I mean, these guys have agents. There's no way his agent would let him do that, sign for one season. I think Harper would have sat out until the middle of March because he knows somebody's going to give him a multi-year deal. And so while it makes some rational sense and some logical sense, the part that we're not factoring in is something Mike said earlier. These guys have agents who are telling them what to do, and somebody's going to pay him at some point. So you don't really see that happen. You don't really see a high-priced free agent wait the market out. Oh, my God, I have nowhere to play. It's March 20th. I'll sign somewhere for one year. You don't really see that too often, and especially with a guy like Harper. So it's probably not grounded in any kind of reality.
Yeah, no, I agree. I found it, and so GTR Fanboy at TKR fanboy, said, I really hope the Mets not to come to the pressure and sign Jacob deGrom because it's not what's in the best interest of the team, nothing more, nothing less. If they do give him an extension, it'll be for one reason only, to shut the fans up. Mets deGrom facts, hashtags. Well, and then I quoted that by saying, well, that would be a lovely and welcome change of pace. Sign Bryce Harper while you're at it. Oh, and hashtag sign Jacob deGrom to a long-term deal would be the in best interest of the team. He's been the most consistently dominant pitcher on this team for a while now. And I should have added quietly, but I don't know whether I had enough. He said, how is that in the best interest for a long-term future of the team when he's going to be 31 in June and the fact that it is highly possible they will be dead in the water come July. Also, they do not have many prospects due to call up for a while. Try not to think with your heart. And I said, I think I am thinking with my heart, but I am also thinking about consistency, track record, and team preservation. In your theory, Mets just would have let Wright walk since he was on the other side of 30. Even if that contract didn't work out on the field, I wouldn't have done that either. Mike.
Jacob deGrom is in an unfortunate situation. So is Brody Van Wagenen as a former agent and present general manager. Now he's seeing the other side of the fence and what the Wilpons are up against or the situation and condition they created for him in his capacity. Anything, and I do include this year, they'd have to rip up this year's arbitration agreement. Anything above and beyond a four-year contract and a fifth-year club option would be absurd because of his age. I don't care how healthy he presents himself today. I'm worried about being hampered by a contract down the road. And as a businessman, again, 4 years, I don't care what the figures are, fifth-year club option, but that has to include this season. Anything above that or beyond that, to me, is unbusiness-wise.
And right, you know, Rich, we were just talking about these long-term deals not working out. So he is 31. At 28, you probably would have signed him to a seven-year deal that would have brought him to 35. So, yeah, Mike is sound in that thinking, correct?
Yeah, I know. That's a hard one, you know, because the DeGrom thing, look, I don't know what to do with that situation if I'm the Mets because – if you sign him for 5 years for, let's just say conservatively, $100 million, so he's making $17 this year, you buy him out of next year, so you sign him now, and so you say, look, you know, you could have gotten $17, $18, $19, you know, if you had a good season in arbitration, so we'll take that pressure off, we'll give you $20 next year, $20 for four more years, now you've got this guy to 35, and he might not even take that. But maybe 2022, so maybe you're at 100, 110 for 5 years. You know, Sam, everything you said, it would be great for the fan base. You know, he deserves it and all of that. But then if you want to be a brutal businessman about it, he's had Tommy John surgery. How often do these long-term deals with pitchers work out? Now, you can look at Scherzer. He's been pretty durable. You know, they gave him, I think it was a seven-year deal. I think he's probably in year four now. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, so he'll be in year five this year. So, you know, these things can work out, but often they don't. You'd be saying, okay, look, you know, when you're 35, we're going to be committed to $22 million for you with a lot more traction on your arm. You want to do it. You want to as a fan. Emotionally, you want to do it. But, you know, and I'll leave you guys with this thought. I'd love to have you both react to it. It's been said about contracts. Are you paying for what somebody has done, or are you paying for what that person will do? Oftentimes, we look at a contract, or even the professionals do it. They look at a contract and they say, well, this guy's done all this stuff. He deserves a contract like this. Okay, maybe. But we have to project out because you're not paying for what the guy did. Now, if you have a Machado, all his flaws aside, a young man like that, you could realistically project out and say, yeah, you know, he's young enough. In the out years of this contract, he'll give us production. That's a wise thing to do. DeGrom, he's done great stuff. 35-year-old pitcher with Tommy John. is this a wise thing to do for 5 years? Look, I don't want to be, you know, the naysayer here. I love the guy. But, I mean, that's a hard question to answer. So let me ask you guys a question. With DeGrom, are you – two-part question. Are you thinking emotionally when you say give him the 5-6 year deal? Or are you thinking about paying for what he will do versus what he has done? I'd like to get both of your reactions to that.
I believe that if you're asking the question from the perspective of any free agent, then yeah, you I think that's a whole different story, because obviously, yeah, there's a track record and that's why he's getting that contract, and you're paying him with the idea that he's going to produce that way, hopefully. Even though you understand at this point what the track record is. I think, though, that at the same time, I think we're dealing with a once-in-a-lifetime situation here with the when it involves the New York Mets. And I think that, you know, I'm not sure what that means for Jacob and whether he's looking for security till he's 40. Probably not. His agent, I mean, it's, you know, I think both parties, what's crazy is that we also have the person who's negotiating used to negotiate for you. So you wonder at that point, and then I'll pass it over to you, Mike, whether in some capacity Brody excuses himself in these situations.
Good question. Again, I think this situation exposing their hands. But to answer Rich's question, I stick to my guns. That's emotional as well as business. 4-year deal, guaranteed with the 5th-year club option. If you really want to make them happy and show your appreciation, give them more money. But, you know, their camp is going to have to meet the organization on years. So
Rich,
know,
what if
agreement,
he wants that 5th-year with a 6th?
I say no. Okay, because you have to set precedents for other players. And for your operating procedure continually down the line. You know, so a case-by-case basis is fine. I'm welcome to introduce that into the conversation. But in this situation, no. It is what it is. You know, and if we want to change the culture, well, sometimes unpopular decisions wind up being the best decisions. Not all the time, but a lot of times. So if, in fact, we're trying to change the culture, well, then you have to make unpopular decisions.
Rich, you can take it.
But, you know, he's right. I mean, Mike's right. And there's a team impact, too, because if he says, okay, you know what, guys, I'm done. I'm going to play through 2020. Who knows if they would trade him or not, but and I'm out. You know, if you're not giving me the 6 years I want, I'm out. The Mets would be taking a hit there because there isn't a Noah Syndergaard in AAA ready to come up and take his spot. I mean, maybe. You know, they have a couple of young pitchers that people are pretty excited about, you know, in the lower levels of the minor leagues, but this person's not going to step in and do what DeGrom does. So, you know, the Mets are playing Russian roulette to a degree. But on the other hand, Mike's right. You're setting precedent, you know, for what other players will do. What do you do when, you know, if Rosario has some really good years? What do you do when he's, a year or two from free agency? Do you do the same thing and start giving these guys 6 years, you know, 7 years, you know, overextending like that? And we all know, as we've been talking about, that those contracts rarely work out. I would not want to be Brody. And then, like Mike said earlier, like you both said, throw in the fact that he used to represent DeGrom. I mean, this is a mess, guys. This DeGrom situation is a mess. What do you do? I don't have an answer for it. I have a lot of things to think about, but I don't have a recommended path forward. If Brody were sitting next to me right now, I wouldn't have a recommended path forward.
I think if you – basically, Mike, do you give him the 5th year? What if he just wants that 5th year guaranteed? And like you said, including this year.
Including this year. If they're both comfortable with the dollar figure, and if that's going to make or break the deal, then you give it to them. Then you give it to them. But when it comes time to renegotiate a new deal, well, then, you know, that's when you stick it to them and say, listen, we met you. Now you have to represent us as an ambassador of this organization for the rest of your life. Because you're going to retire a Met if you so desire. And the Mets desperately need something like that, you know? So there has to be a relationship, not just an agreement. There has to be a relationship in order for that to work, a continuing relationship. How they pull that off, you know, that remains to be seen. But if that fifth year being guaranteed is the maker or breaker of the deal, then you give it to them. But it has to come with, you know, a stipulation, an asterisk, you know, and say, look, you know, he's a stand-up guy. I'm not bringing his character into question by no stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying he's got to come back and give back to this organization. That's all. In some way, shape, or form. I don't know what, how, where, when. I have no idea. But for as long as they're in complete agreement, I guess I can deal with it. I just don't want to be hampered long term. You know, and if that fifth year can come at a slightly lower price, even better. Maybe that's what I'm getting towards. I don't know. It's hard. As Rich says, I'm in complete conflict with this situation. But I do know if you want to change the culture, sometimes you got to make unpopular decisions. It's unfortunate that it happens to be DeGrom who's this line in the sand.
Yeah. It certainly is, but, you know, we'll see what happens over the next while, because they haven't said, you know, well, if anything, Rich, you know, I usually you see in the news when talks get cut off, it's reported on.
Well, I don't know if they've cut off talks, but what I've heard, I know you might not have been referencing this particular situation, but with DeGrom, what I've heard is that no offer has been made, and that, you know, that there's a lot of, hey, you know, we'd like to have you be a Met for life, and DeGrom's like, that's great, you know, you don't have to pay me, and his agent and all that. But from what I understand, as of a couple of days ago, watching Hot Stove on Thursday, no dollars have been exchanged. And now, whether or not DeGrom is locked in on his, if it's not done by opening day, it's not going to get done thing, okay. You know, a lot of players have said that, and some have stuck to it, and some have not over the years. So, as far as I know, if you want to call them negotiations, they're feeling each other out. They're like sparring right now, but nobody's throwing any real punches. That's my understanding of the situation.
Well, if I may, what I don't like is DeGrom intimating that he might withhold innings. You know,
I hated
words,
that.
Not his. That's best left unsaid. If that's what you're feeling, fine. I don't mind. You're a professional, and this is a business at the end of the day. But, you know, keep that to yourself. Fans don't want to hear that. We put up with the minutiae of contract negotiations, but fans just don't want to hear that.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. Well, guys, you know, Jacob DeGrom is not the only part of spring training we got going on right now. Rich, I'm gonna send it over to you for where we go with this. What is first on your mind other than Jacob DeGrom when you're thinking about spring training?
I'm thinking that there are a lot of little things to figure out for this team. And obviously we don't have long enough for me to get into every one of them. I'll get into a couple. Center field is clearly an issue. Will it be Broxton? Will it be Lagares? Will it be a combination of both? Will they just, you know, play by who has better numbers against that night's pitcher? Will they try to play them both at times? I mean, if you have Broxton in left and Lagares in center, nothing's falling in, guys. So do they do that late in games? And then what about this? What are they going to do for that fifth outfield position? So are they going to go with a Blanco, or are they going to go with Rajai Davis? Is Ty Kelly real? Is Ty Kelly, God forbid. Is Jeff McNeil really going to be an outfielder? So that whole center field and the later impact on other positions, who will start? How will they move it around? Will it be Jeff McNeil truly as an outfielder? Will they try to start with Davis or Blanco as the fifth outfielder? I think all that is intriguing to me. And now you've got the infield situation. What are they going to do about that? You know, is Frazier going to play first? Is Alonso going to get called up in mid-April like we've been talking about? They have a real logjam. Today they signed Danny Echevarria. He's the only natural shortstop now that they have behind Rosario. Yes, Lowry can play the position, but he hasn't been a full-time shortstop in what, 6-7 years now. So is Echevarria a guy who's on the roster as the last infielder, or do they try to make a go with it and say, look, Rosario can play basically every day. If he gets hurt or something, we can throw Lowry out there in an emergency, and we'll call Echevarria up the next day. So what's going to happen there depth-wise, Frazier-wise? So my point in summary is the Mets have depth in a lot of positions. They have a lot of people. And a lot of people who are decent ball players, and they have to try to figure out what they're going to do with this. Who starts on the 25-man roster? Who goes to Syracuse? How do they configure the guys who do make that 25-man roster? I said on Twitter the other day, and I really believe it, the Mets are trying to build a version of the Cubs, you know, which is, and I think that's great. If you look at the Cubs, Ben Zobrist plays a different position every day. And fine, you know, they're all about interchangeable parts. Now you look at guys like Hayward, sometimes he's in center, sometimes he's in right. And the Mets, if that's what they're looking to do, how do they sort out these pieces? They have a lot of pieces. And so I think this spring is going to be fascinating. To me, those are the storylines.
And let me just point out, just to really bask in the glory of this, what I'm about to say. But a lot of those pieces are going to be right up the road in Syracuse, Mike.
Isn't that great? I love it. Not for nothing, but Syracuse is going to be really good this year. Look out, International League. Just to pick up where Ritz left off. But that just goes back to Brody Van Wagenen and his overall work on the 40-man roster, which I believe is much improved, as is the 25-man roster. Much improved. Particularly happy with the catching situation. Look, Mesoraco, it's a matter of perspective. Mesoraco goes from a marginal starter to an outstanding backup. I love the signing. I hope he is indeed the backup. It's interesting to see what they're going to do with Travis d'Arnaud. But this spring training, more so than 2015, is going to be most interesting of all with all the moves. Brody's transacted in excess of 40 bodies, whether they're coming or going, and that's a lot. So who knows, you know, what's going to happen this spring, but it's going to be interesting to watch it work itself out. My biggest take from the offseason is he facilitated much of it via trading prospects and other trades, and the money that they parted with, you know, they didn't increase payroll much, but in lieu of money, we paid a stiff price in prospects, I believe. So that's one way of going about business, and not for nothing, that's part of the reason why you develop prospects and you draft and blah, blah, blah. Not all of them begin to make your team. Some of them you have to part with. So short term, I agree with the plan. I guess his drafting is going to dictate how we grade his long term. Certainly like what he's done organizationally. Take it away.
So I would say, Rich, that they should sign Bryce Harper to be their fifth outfielder and have some of those names of the guys that you mentioned up in Syracuse. But anyway, all joking aside, let's talk about Keon Broxton. Let's get a little specific here. It is interesting that they have these two mostly defensive guys going up who have shown potential in offense in the past but have never been able to make it work. that is an interesting dynamic that is at play. And do you really think that they're just going to have both of them on the team at the same time?
No. I remain convinced that they are going to trade Legarris in spring training. And to a point where, in my brain, I put the odds at 95% Legarris is traded. Now, I know I said earlier, you know, what will happen with these pieces. That's a potential outcome. A potential outcome could be that before we get to opening day, Legarris is moved to make some room. And you know, something we talk about often on these podcasts, yes, it's about making room, but it's also about shedding $9 million. And I really believe that that's what they'll do. I think they'll shed the $9 million there and say, okay, sometimes we'll go with Nimmo, McNeil, and Conforto. Sometimes we'll go with Broxton, McNeil, and Conforto. But in either event, we don't need to be paying a part-time player $9 million. And you could scream, and people will on Twitter if they ever traded Legarris, about this isn't the way a New York team should operate and blah, 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 blah. Okay, maybe that's right. Who cares? I do, regardless whether it's right or wrong, I do think that that's what they will do. I think they see a $9 million part-time player. They see a young guy like Broxton who's probably making not much more than the major league minimum, and they're like, okay, we'll find a taker for Legarris, maybe bring back a bullpen arm, and done with it. That's what I think will happen.
I really hope, just the way you put that together, I really hope that's exactly how it went in the boardroom. With Jeff Wilson and the guys. Yeah, just bop, 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 bop. Okay. Mike, I mean, that just basically does it. And here is where you can't necessarily fault them. I mean, we love Legarris, but just like, Mr. Mets Nostradamus is saying, you have to not always think with your heart.
Exactly. I would say the younger you are, the harder it is to do, and the older you are, the easier it is to do. I don't know. Maybe that's a generational thing. Maybe that's just me. But outfield is certainly going to be interesting. What to say? It is what it is. I had something to say, and I'm just completely spacing on it right now. But it does remind me somewhat of the 2000 Mets with that outfield. They're going to be overly reliant this year from offense, guys in the infield and behind the plate. Now, if Alonso comes through and we get improvement out of third base and Rosario continues to improve and we get something out of Cano, you know, there will be a lot of similarities with the 2000 team.
So Robinson Cano had, you know, some stuff to say. It's always these headlines, though, Rich, that, you know, it's just the fans are going to react a certain way to them. And when you see Cano feels like he's a 25-year-old man again, it's like, don't you just roll your eyes, Rich? You know, it's like as much, you know, I really hope that he performs great, and I do believe he will. Hopefully he's not just another older star player to come to the Mets that doesn't work out. But it's just, you know, until we get that championship, we're going to be cynical.
Well, here it is, February 17th. So since October 1st, what Robinson Cano has probably done is some light baseball activities. He's been down there for a couple days. He's probably done some quad stretches, some hamstring stretches. He's thrown in the outfield a little bit to get the arm loosened up. Of course he feels 25. You know, I mean, he hasn't done anything. But the true test is going to be in July when the guy's played for 3 months in the heat at 35. What's he going to give us then? It's easy to feel 25 now. So maybe he does, but I, you know, to me that's a trite statement. We'll see how he feels and how he's performing in the middle of the season. And that's not to say, I think managed correctly, I think Cano can be an asset for this team. And did you guys hear Van Wagenen on with Francesa last Monday? Did you guys hear that?
No,
I didn't hear it.
Okay. So I was glued to it. And so, and of course, Mike was being rude as hell, but Van Wagenen handled it very well. And so he said, look, I want to play Cano 130 games. And then Francesa went, the guy's played 150, 155 his whole career, then when he was suspended. And, you know, what are you doing that for? That's not why you got it. And he's like, look, Mike, I'm trying to get the most I can out of every player on my roster. We feel as though at 35 we will get the most out of Cano if we play him about 130 games a year. That is perfectly sensible to me. And now it's up to the Mets to manage that.
That sounds great. That does sound great. And did he go? Did he go? Mike. Did he cut him off like that too? Mike, listen.
Mike, what day is it? Mike. So Francesa got all over him for that. He got all over him when Brody said, "I do think we have a contending team," and you do. This is a good baseball team. Is it necessarily a playoff team? Who the hell knows? But it's a good baseball team with a good roster. He's done a good job, and so he got on his case for that. He got on his case for when he talked about, you know, having movable parts, you know, because Francesa's old school. You know, you have the center fielder, the leadoff guy. Yeah.
Why is that not a rational thing to say that Robinson Cano is coming off a suspension? He played some games at the end of the year, and now he's a 36-year-old man. Like Mike gets. Mike should get that. He's been around sports long enough to understand. Look, he's bringing – and another infielder came in today, Danny Hecheverria, like we were saying. You know, it's there's people to spell these guys right now.
Right, and you get the most out of your 40-man. Brody kept saying that. He kept saying, I've got a 40-man roster I'm going to work with. I'm going to get the most out of these guys. And if it means, like, Nimmo sits against a tough lefty. Maybe Conforto sits against a tough lefty. I've got Lagares and Broxton. We might have Lagares, I could talk about earlier, but anyway. I've got Lagares and Broxton. I could put two righty bats out there against tough lefty. I'm going to use my entire team, my entire 40-man roster, to the best of my ability, and customize it to the player. You know, Wilson Ramos, the guy has an injury history. You get 120 games out of him, that's great. And the way you get 120 games is you have a Mesoraco or a Darno, whoever it is, and you give these guys 40 starts. You give Cano 32 games off. This is the kind of thing. Maybe you move Frazier around. Maybe Lowry. He also said about Lowry. He said, well, I plan to get Lowry, 400 to 500 at-bats. And Francis was like, where are you going to get him from? You've got Frazier. You're going to bring up Alonzo. You've got outfielders. We're going to get these at-bats from McNeil. And he was all over him. And Brody kept saying, look, as the season goes along, guys get hurt. Things happen. You can find at-bats if you have versatile players, and you do, and you play matchup ball. And that's what he intends to do. And as far as I'm concerned, what in the hell is wrong with that? Look at the Cubs. That's what they do. They're consistently competitive with that exact philosophy. You match up the players, give you the best chance to win that game, and the byproduct of that is guys are getting days off. They're staying fresher. I think it's perfectly sensible.
Mike?
Can't add much more to that. He is, in fact, doing a good job. I grant him that. And very creative. We said that, you know, during the onset of winter. This is going to be a test in his creativity. And, you know, I think he's done a good job. And the 40-man is what I'm focused on, and as well as he. And I think he's, you know, done a tremendous job. The only thing is that this whole DeGrom situation, to me, somewhat is exposing ownership. You know, they brought in a new sales pitch man, which is Brody. And he's young and energetic, and he's changing the message or the delivery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But behind the curtain is still that guy pulling the levers. And I just feel the DeGrom situation is exposing that. For as much as they're trying to hide it. Otherwise, I'm with Rich, and I'm quite content with the changes that he's made to the 40-man under the conditions that he has to work with, because, again, he hasn't greatly increased payroll by no stretch of the imagination, but it's been an effective offseason nonetheless. That being said, the Mets have won, you know, off-seasons before. So it's just going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out. I'm on his side. He's won me over. I was very skeptical at first because, like I pointed out, I guess podcasts ago, that he and Jeff have a prior relationship. They're buddies. And I was a bit against that. But he's won me over with the work that he's done during the winter. So I'm cool. I'm very cool. And I'll leave it at that. I'm cool. Like Fonzie would say. Sam?
Sam, are you cool?
Sam?
Hey, sorry. I had a technological glitch once more while I was trying to introduce. I had a great setup for you, Mr. Thomas. You should have heard everything I said while I was muted.
I appreciate the kind words, and my apologies for coming in like a diva at the end of the podcast and just coming in at the end fashionably late.
We're glad to have get you on board, man. Welcome to the show, Mr. Coppinger.
Thank you. I'm much appreciated as always. I was going to say if I get the gist of what I've heard so far, it's listen, we can't get on Brody for bringing all these guys in when we complained that there was a lack of depth last year, that the depth was paper thin, and it was paper thin last year. But this year, listen, that there's options at every position. You know, Jed Lowry is a great signing for no other reason than that now we have another shortstop on the roster outside of Rosario. So they seem to have thought about everything. You know, even so, you look at center field now, which was a vast wasteland, but now if what they say is true, and McNeil is going to get regular reps in the outfield and have Nimmo go to center, then that's not the worst thing in the world. As long as you, and I hate making guys super utility guys, because a lot of times in the Mets cases, it has stunted players' growth as hitters. Murphy, I think that happened to Murphy. I think that happened to an extent with Duda. I think, and that's what happened to an extent with Justin Turner also. But as long as McNeil is going to get regular reps in the outfield right from jump, right from the beginning of spring training, I think that could work too. You know, and I'm one of these guys that I still want to see this team play games. I don't think we can judge the Brody era by winning an offseason like you guys have said. I want to see them play games. I want to see how this is all put together. But what Brody did do was address one of the weaknesses in the recent past of the Mets, and that's having no depth and having a paper-thin roster. There's one more move that I would make that the last time I was here we talked about, and we can get into that later. I still would think about trading Frazier for Cashner and creating more depth on the rotation, and having enough guys on, and still having enough guys on the infield. But I think what Brody's done now, if this is the end, I think it's acceptable.
Acceptable. Obviously, you should have heard how many times we said Bryce Harper at the beginning of the show, but we weren't exactly. We know it's not happening, but we're saying how much buzz it would all of a sudden. Everybody would be talking about the Mets across baseball. It would be a news story, on the morning shows. People would be talking about, and maybe it would just be the off season, but it would generate revenue immediately. It would generate revenue immediately, and it sometimes boggles my mind to think about it, because I see where the Wilpons are coming from, John, but at the same time, I do think it makes all the world of sense for a franchise that could use, like, imagine like the players and Bryce Harper just walks into spring training right now.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. It energizes the roster for sure. And it brings a buzz to the locker room. And you're right. It would create revenue off the bat, because you're going to have a lot of walk-up ticket sales. You're going to have more, maybe even more plans that are bought in the middle of the season once this thing starts going. And you know how I feel. I've said it before. 1 year, $40 million. There's no harm in making the offer. Even if the Boris Harper camp doesn't take it, as long as it gets out, then we know, oh, okay, you really did try to do something a little different. But we haven't heard that buzz. We haven't heard that interest. And I think that's what frustrates Met fans, especially the Met fans like I assume most of us are, have been around from the 80s when you had Frank Cashin building a team to win with the express purpose to win. I don't think this – I think this team is built to win but not dominate. You know, Frank Cashin built his teams to dominate, and we remember that. And for that to turn around into what it is now, it's fine, but it is a little frustrating. I certainly get it. Now, I think the problem is that you have most of the teams in Major League Baseball now have adopted that strategy, albeit for a different reason, in terms of being frugal and depending on the algorithms. And while I think it's organic and it's not collusion, I do think it's going to lead to some sort of work stoppage down the line unless somebody comes up with a brilliant idea. And I think that that's unfortunate. But that's – I got off on a tangent there.
No. You brought up a lot of great points about the entire thing. I mean, I'm looking at the roster right now, and this is certainly a well-rounded team on paper as we can see it here. But, yeah, you know – even the Nationals teams that Bryce Harper had been on have been slightly built to dominate, but unfortunately they couldn't figure all their shit out when it was when you know the time came at the end. But Rich, you know, I'm just going to pass it over to you for so many different points that Sean brought up, and you know take us around some of the ideas that he just mentioned.
Well. You know, I think he's right. I think this team is meant to compete now. It might not be a dominant team, and I think that's part of what Francesa and Van Wagenen talked about. Is he said, you know, Francesa tried to put words in Brody's mouth when Brody said, well, we've done a lot of things, we have a lot of players, Bryce Harper's not in our plans, and so Francesa, of course, turned that around to say, well, you're telling me you don't have room for a Bryce Harper. That's ridiculous. How can you not have room? And that's not what Van Wagenen said. He said, based on the team that I inherited, and I had work to do, right, I felt like it was better to spread the money around, to spread the moves around, to address multiple holes than put not all but a lot of eggs in one basket to bring in a Machado or Harper. And to me, that's a very well-reasoned, very rational opinion to have. If the Mets signed Harper, and we all wanted them to, of course we did, but if they sign Harper, I don't care if you're the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, if you sign a player like that for that kind of money, it does inhibit other things you can do. To what degree, who knows, but it does inhibit them. And the Mets had a lot of holes, and Bryce Harper wasn't going to fill all those holes. Bryce Harper wasn't going to remake the bullpen. Bryce Harper wasn't going to add depth to this team that, as John said, was paper thin, you know, as thin as a New York-style pizza. They had to do these things. And there's no way you could have done all these things that they've done and sign Harper. I just don't think it's realistic. It's not even realistic for the Yankees. The Yankees didn't even check in on this guy. So the team is built to compete now. It's thin because we all know the minor leagues are not, you know, bountiful, so they have to address that. And Mike said, you know, we'll evaluate Brody's long-term plan based on his drafting and how he does that. Is he going to address that as an ongoing thing? He certainly has to. But given where this team was at the end of 2018, and you can even go back to 17, we all know what the problems were. Paper thin, could not withstand one injury. You had an injury, and who did you have out there? You had Ty Kelly playing for you, okay? And that's not acceptable. So they had to make a whole bunch of moves with the resources they had, and he did it. And as far as I'm concerned, it's okay. He did a good job. And I'm looking right now. I'm just going to share this with you. I happen to see on Twitter, Mets minor league deals this offseason, okay? Luis Avalon, good situational lefty. Devin Mesoraco, we know him. They need a depth behind the plate. Hector Santiago, bullpen guy, maybe fifth starter, who knows. Rajai Davis, Gregor Blanco, guys with significant major league experience who can step in the outfield in a pinch. Adani Echevarria, Danny Espinosa. None of those moves, not one of them, on its face is going to make anybody jump up and down. They're not sexy. Those moves had to be made to address the glaring depth issue. So that's where I am. I mean, I Would it have been nice to sign Harper or Machado? Yeah, I would have run out and bought the jerseys too. I would have been thrilled. But only certain things could be done. You can't do everything. And he went down the path of addressing multiple needs with the resources he had. And as far as I'm concerned, I think the guy did a damn good job. That's my two cents.
John, what is your take on you know, the overall job? What grade would you give Brody for his first offseason? And what do you think he is looking for in spring training right now?
Well, I would definitely give him a solid B. You know, like I said, I think, and like Rich said, you have to give him credit for creating a roster and a system that has a little depth. I would say the one bad, if I had to give a reason for the downgrade, it isn't even not signing Bryce Harper, because like Rich said, you know, you can't do everything. And, you know, while I thought maybe a one-year deal for Harper on top of everything that Brody's done might have been plausible, certainly not a 10-year, $350 million, or even a 7-year, $235 million deal, that wouldn't have been feasible along with everything else. So I'd definitely give him a B. The one thing that worries me is getting rid of Kelenic. That's the one thing that's going to bug me until we know what he's about and until we know what Diaz is about. But I think with the depth that's been created, I think you have to give Brody a lot of credit. In terms of what he's looking for in spring training, I think just how everybody acclimates to their roles, their new roles. I want to see what Jeff McNeil is all about in the outfield. I think that's the biggest thing I want to see, especially if he's going to get a ton of at-bats out there. I certainly want to see what Peter Alonso can do in spring training, if he could pull off the impossible and get an invite to the major league team from jump, from opening day. I think those are the two big things I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think those are all rational things to be looking for here. Mike, we haven't heard from you since Metro Domus joined us. What do you think?
I have to put any kind of grade on BBW in context. If he was working for, say, the Phillies, who came out and said, I want to spend stupid money, well, then Brody gets an F. But considering he's working for the Mets, I agree with John, a strong B+. I might even give him an A- based on his creativity. Like I said, there's been in excess of 40 players transacted throughout the wintertime, some gone, some incoming. That's a lot. You know, that's shaking up the barrel. And again, sometimes the most effective decisions aren't the most popular. And he's really rattled the cage, and it's just a matter of waiting, seeing how this all plays out. So considering that he works for this ownership, I grade him very well for his off season. Now these guys just have to put it all into application between the lines.
So here's where I'll loop back around. Rich, you know, what we're talking about, you know, the roster, you know, what the job he's done is acceptable. You know, because he's working for the Mets, this is what I give him. Is there an extent that the Wilpons and just even the brand understands their brand? And I brought this up before. Plays into the you gotta believe, the hope, the hope springs eternal, and just the idea of them being a scrappy baseball team that's always going to try to do better than they should?
Well, that's kind of where they are, right? That's the brand they have right now. The brand is we're putting together a versatile team, a deep team. We have a great starting pitching staff, and you know, that's the brand right now. And I like where John went earlier, because I haven't really thought about that too much, about how Cashin built teams to dominate. Well, this team isn't that. This team isn't Strawberry Gooden, blah, blah, blah. It's not that. But this is a team that they're trying to sell as we're going to be fun. You know, our pitching's we should not have a long losing streak, because our pitching really shouldn't allow that. we're going to be a fun team of versatile players, of you know, scrappy players. What did Brody say? Hiring Chili Davis. We're not going to try to hit home runs. That'll be an outcome. That'll be, you know, an offshoot, but we're going to take a good approach. We're going to get good pitches to hit. We're going to emphasize getting on base. We're going to do those things. So, yeah, it's not the dominating team that, you know, could bludgeon you to death. That's all they're talking about. You know, Brody said it with Francesa. You know, we're going to grind out at bats. We're going to get on base. We're going to do those things. Chile's going to reinforce that. So it's more of a working man's team than it is a behemoth kind of a team. And I don't know that they're really – the organization really isn't branding that to my knowledge. When Brody's on with Francesa, he'll say it. He'll talk about the philosophy. They aren't putting a slogan like they used to do on Shea, you know, come have your kids meet our kids, or baseball like it ought to be. They're not doing that as an organization. But when they talk about themselves, they talk about themselves as sort of the working man's team as opposed to the team chock full of superstars. So from a branding perspective, albeit a bit informal, I think that is where they're going.
Can I jump in?
And John.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. But let me frame it first, Hugh, too. That with what Rich said, I was also meaning more along the lines of, let's say, you know, Jeff Wilpon once gave an underdog shirt out. You know, that's what I'm wondering too. Is that they've been playing this game because of Bernie Madoff or the fact that they weren't any good at it, even when they had money. To begin with, for a very long time. Do you think they understand that this brand goes all the way back to 1962 in some of that scrappy way?
Oh, I think it even goes back further. I think it goes back to the Dodgers of the 40s and 50s. Them bums, we'll get them next year. You know, this family that owns this team is very well aware of the history of the Dodgers. And how they even marketed themselves, or were marketed, because nobody really marketed a team back then. We didn't have brand executives back in the 40s and 50s, but that's what the Dodgers seemed to be known as. That was the scrappy underdog team that was always, we'll get them next year. And I always thought that was a dangerous road to ride on or to drive on, because if you accept that as an organization, then I think you're behind the eight ball. But yes, I do think that it goes back even further that far. But I do want to say to Rich, thank you. Thank you for bringing up Chili Davis, because I think that's going to be a huge, huge storyline for not just spring training, but for this season. We all know what happened, you know, that there was a little divide of philosophies between Davis and some of the Cubs roster, most notably Chris Bryant, who struggled under Davis. You know, these guys were about launch angle. Davis isn't about launch angle. I think there are certain guys on this roster that immediately will take to Davis. McNeil, Brandon Nimmo. I think they're going to be straight-A students under Davis. I think the question is, who's going to be, how is the rest of the roster, how is the rest of the lineup going to take to Davis's teachings? And I think how they respond to Chile is going to go a long way in telling the story of how many runs they score and how much support the starting staff gets.
That's a great point. Mike, I want to loop back over to you with all of this, but let's start with Chile Davis. I think a lot of great points were made there that, you know, the hitting philosophy of the team just seemed a little off. And under Sandy Alderson, even outdated, I would even say, because of that whole money ball, you know, move, walk over to second, and then hit a three-run home run. And we started seeing it once Sandy Alderson went away. Even with Callaway, we started seeing a different type of philosophy before Brody came in here. And now Brody is saying these types of things in the press. So what is your take? Where do you go from here?
We know he revamped the Mets analytical department, which wasn't hard to do, considering they only had reportedly, you know, three people in it. I'm only going to layer on top of what you guys already said about the coaching staff. I love the incoming hiring of Chili Davis on top of Dave Island. I think it's a great great coaching staff. I really do. And you bring in the bench coach addition. So, you know, Mickey Callaway has a tremendous staff behind him. I just like to ignite the conversation about him being on the hot seat. Mickey Callaway, take it away.
Definitely now that he has a bench coach and a new general manager, I think just by default he'll have the seats a little warm under him. I don't think he's under any imminent danger, but certainly there's going to be more focus on him this year than last.
Well, I think he handled it a lot better post-June. And June just seemed to be where the pendulum, you know, swung the other way a little too much. Rich, what do you think about that? Let's go with the hot seat.
Well, I think there's no question Mickey's on the hot seat. I think if this team after 81 games is 40-41 and they're, you know, 9 games out, I think he's gone. I really do. For all the obvious reasons. He's not Brody's guy. Brody didn't bring him in here. Brody has thrown the gauntlet down. You know, he's not saying, hey, look, we're rebuilding, hang in there with us. He's saying, no. He's saying, we're competitive now. He's actually gone so far as to say they're the team to beat and all that kind of stuff. So if things aren't playing out the way he expects them, you know, that there aren't 3 major injuries to the pitching staff on top of it, where the team just isn't winning, and they're basically healthy but not winning, I think he's gone. If they're not 500 at the 81 game mark, I think he's out. Because I think Brody will do anything to make this team competitive. And if he feels like a change in the front office, he's not going to care. He doesn't care about Mickey Callaway. You know, if it's going to take a change in the front, in the manager's seat to get that done, if he feels like that would have an impact, he'll grab one of his guys and put that guy in there while there's still half a season to go. So I think Mickey is on a short lease. And I like Mickey. I hope he gets off to a good start. I hope they're doing well at the All-Star break and he's able to finish this thing out and bring the team to the playoffs. That's what I want to see happen. But if they're under 500 at the halfway point, I don't know what you guys think, but think about where Brody has set the level of expectation and what that would mean and the fact that he's not Brody's guy. I can't see him surviving that.
Rich, I agree 1,000,000%, and I believe he's aggressive enough and confident enough to do it and follow through on a firing.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
I think I give him a little longer leash. I don't think that there's going to be that quick a trigger at say 40-41. Not that I would disagree with it. I would like the aggressiveness of that as opposed to letting Terry Collins go maybe a year or two past where he should have been. So I wouldn't disagree if he was fired at 40-41. I would like the aggression. I don't know if that's the benchmark. I think it might be a little lower. I think it might be if it's like say 35-47, then I would say definitely he's gone. But hanging around 400,
right.
I think maybe he gets till the end of the season.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I was just going to say that Jim Riddleman would most likely be the one to take over, right, Mike?
Short term, sure. I'm sure Brody would seek a new manager in the off season. But I just want to reiterate, Callaway does have a good coaching staff behind him.
So, Rich, what do you think about the job Mickey Callaway is about to do? I mean, you know, is he really going to have a sophomore slump after such a, you know, freshman fritz or whatever? Do they have a term for it?
Well, look at last year, right? So while the lineup card thing, that's never going to go away. Francesa got on Callaway for that when he had Wilpon and Brody and Mickey in the studio back, I think it was November, December. And that's never going to go away. That's always going to follow him around. But it was one game, okay. The team, the epically bad June, I think the actual numbers were, I think they were 5-23 or something like that, something very close to that in June. I don't even know how that happens, but the epically bad June, but you give the guy a little bit of a pass because of the injuries. You know, they counted on Jay Bruce, whether you like the guy or not, and Jay Bruce was hurt. So, okay. you had that. You had Syndergaard was out the entire month with the finger thing, and so he had some key injuries to the team, and he got his okay look. That they played very well. They were 44-37 in the second half. So great, right? September they had the best record in Major League Baseball, 19-10. Don't tell me that it doesn't count. Yes, it counts. Major League games, they count. They played against Major League teams who were several of them were in the hunt, so those games count. So there were a few positives, right? But now I think the training wheels are off for Brody. This is a remade roster with an aggressive general manager. And so, Sam, to your question about the job he's about to do, okay, you know, we gave you a pass in year one because a couple of things went right, a lot of things went wrong. Okay. In my opinion, like I said earlier, the bar is a lot higher now. The expectations are higher. Some of the crap he pulled last year, whether the lineup card, I think more than the lineup card, some of the games where he made these weird moves, and he would say after in the press conference that, well, I didn't want their guy to be announced in the game because I wanted them to have him later because I know I had a better matchup. Come on, Brody. I mean, come on, Mickey. You screwed it up. You jumped the gun on it. You didn't make the other manager announce his player in to cost him a player. Come on. So all that is over now. You know, that was your – you learned. You made your mistakes. Learned from your mistakes. Now there's a solid coaching staff around him, so he's got the support, and he's got the roster, and if he doesn't deliver – you're in the big leagues now, bud. Expectations are high. So, again, I go back to it. He's going to be under a lot of pressure. I really believe it.
Yeah, it seems about that way, but why not? You know, when you look at this team, there is no reason why things couldn't potentially come together. So, John, where do you see this team being? Overall, where do you let's throw a number out there right now, even though I kind of hate predictions, but what kind of wins do you think they're going to have? And keep that in mind that we're talking about Brody being an aggressive general manager, and he's going to have his first trade deadline coming up, obviously depending on where the team is.
Put a gun to my head right now with this roster, and only because I think the rest of the division is going to be very competitive, whether Bryce signs with Washington or Philly or not. I'm going to be conservative and say 85. But the one thing I do want to say in response to Rich is that I guess I'm still a little bullish on Callaway. I do think he's going to be a lot better off. Like Mike said, he's going to be a lot better off with a better coaching staff. I think a lot of what happened, like the lineup card thing, that was a one-off. That was stupidity. And what a lot of people have said is that that's the bench coach's responsibility. So I lay that on Di Sarcina, first year as a bench coach. I lay that on him. The changing pitchers before a pinch hitter is announced, that bothered me actually a lot more than the lineup card. And especially that it happened twice during the season. Hopefully he's learned from that. But I'm bullish on Callaway because he is a disciple of Terry Francona. And if anybody understands about getting off to a slow start as a manager, it's Terry Francona, who was very mediocre with the Phillies and then all of a sudden became a genius with the Red Sox and the Indians. So that, and I think that might be clouding my judgment in terms of Callaway, that I think they will stick with him past midseason. I think that they do see a little bit in him, and I think the Wilpons will make that clear to Brody to kind of lay loose with him in the middle of the season. But when you look at their roster and when you look at the fact that I do think that Callaway is going to improve, I'm going to say 85. I'm going to be conservative. Let's see. But like you said, Sam, let's see where they're at after the trade deadline.
Yeah, and if you see them as an 85-win team right now, and I'll move it over to you, Rich, on this one. Are we expecting that, yeah, you know what, Brody, if they're hovering, if they're an 85-win team means they're in contention. So that could easily go to 90 games or 100 if he wants to make it so.
Well, I see them at 88 right now, so I'm not too far off from what John said. And at 88, you're right in there for the division, and you're right in there for a wild card. You probably should get it. But the thing about it is, if you're tracking to 88, I think to your question, Sam, will Brody be aggressive at the deadline and bring in, you know, a needed piece, whatever that piece might be? And my answer to that is yes, if he has the pieces to make trades with. You know, obviously, typically at the deadline, you see top quality prospects, or at least quality prospects, go for established major leaguers, might be in the last year of their contracts. Well, do the Mets have that to offer? I don't know. If they have prospects to offer, maybe they can make a trade with, you know, somebody off the major league roster to find a missing piece. But to answer your question, yes, I do think they would be very aggressive. If they're tracking and they look like they're in contention, why would this man's aggressiveness stop then? And I think it would only increase. So I think he'll do everything possible to get them in the postseason.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
I think the National League East is going to beat the hell out of each other. Now, we know, positionally speaking, the Mets are going to be deep and they're going to be confident, or at least that's what we hope. So it falls on the pitching. And, you know, can we sustain injury to the starting rotation? That remains to be seen. I think that's still the biggest question mark. But if we get health out of the big four, if they all can get at least between, you know, 27 to 30 starts, we'll be in really, really good shape. So without making a good prediction, I expect to be ahead I hope to be on the winning side of a lot of close games. Can we sustain injury to the pitching? And I'm terribly excited for the season ahead of Zach Wheeler. Just figure out, throw that in there. Terribly excited. I'm anticipating something great from him this season.
And with that, I will segue over to, last but not least, Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow will most likely
<I heard that. laughs>
he'll most likely be in AAA, which will be Syracuse, after all, Rich. So, okay. Everybody likes to, I actually really liked what the point Anthony DeComo made about how he's a story. People want to come see him, and we're going to write about it. Now, on top of that, he's actually been having some success, and he didn't have to switch on a dime like Michael Jordan did, or hope he most likely won't switch on a dime, you know. A lot of going back, if we're comparing multi-sport athletes, Michael Jordan was hitting pretty solidly when the strike went down in AA, and he started in AA at age 32. So Tim Tebow's actually been getting some reps in the minor league, getting back into baseball. It actually might be feasible, and who knows how – well, and here's how I frame the fact that he hasn't really been getting much athletic – other than just working out and staying in shape in general. He hasn't been playing games in football for that as many years as he was, and he was generally not really, you know, eventually he was hardly starting. So it could be feasible that Tim Tebow makes in baseball. I know everybody likes to think this is a joke and that it's just another reason why the Mets are a joke, but it's a good thing for the organization that he puts people in the seats, that he puts butts in the seats, and he's going to be getting people most likely in AAA up there.
Is that to me?
Yes, Sam? Yes, that was to you.
Okay,
Rich.
Okay. All right, thank you. So I agree with you. I don't see any harm with Tim Tebow being with the team, first of all, because A, you're right, he had a press conference yesterday, the day before, when he arrived. I mean, he brings attention to the New York Mets. When they're playing in Port St. Lucie or wherever they're playing in Florida, people want to see him play. So you're selling tickets. And so if you're going to tell me the harm is he's taking – give me the name of this prospect, this great young prospect who isn't playing because Tebow's playing. I'll sit here and wait for that name, okay? Because there isn't one.
I think it's George Stampolinakis, or how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, George Theodore. Yeah, we'll go with George Theodore, the stork, right? So the remake of George Theodore. So the thing about it is he's not taking anybody's spot. He's bringing attention to the team. He's selling tickets. And what is he doing? My opinion, if he makes it as a September call-up someday, maybe, but I don't think he's ever really going to make it, at least my opinion. But the thing about it is he's setting a good example for these kids. He's like, look, I bust my ass here. You know, I was a football player, didn't work out. I'm working really hard to become a baseball player. These kids look up to him. You know, what is he, 29, 30 years old? They look up to him and they say, okay, here's a guy who's a two-sport guy, and to try to make it in baseball at his age, he's working hard. He's doing things he has to do. He's in great shape. He plays the game hard. Okay, you know, if he brings that intangible and sets that tone for these young kids, he is giving you something back. He's not just selling tickets. He is giving you something back. What in the hell is the harm with having this guy? I don't see the problem. I think it's great, personally.
John, before I pass it over to you, I'm going to read this page from the Mets News. It's probably, Anthony DiComo wrote it. Last autumn, former University of Florida football coach Steve Spurrier reached out to Tim Tebow with what the latter described as an awesome and humbling offer. Come play quarterback for a team in the fledgling Alliance of American Football, an upstart league they debuted this month. Multiple times, Spurrier called multiple times. Tebow respectfully declined. It wasn't very hard, Tebow said Saturday afternoon upon reporting to Mets camp for his third spring training. I'm all in on baseball. John.
I believe him, certainly for the reason that when you look at Tebow from year one to year two, year one, he looked like a football player. He had the big broad shoulders. He had the big arms, and he looked very mechanical. He looked like a zero level player in MLB The Show. Okay. But now you look at him 2018, he looked more like a baseball player. His physique was more fluid. And more like a baby. I don't think he could even play football now if he wanted to because of that. So, yeah, I do think it's an easy choice. And it goes to what I was actually going to say about Tebow. I don't think there's any harm in it because I think, in my estimation, looking from the outside, Tim Tebow's intentions are genuine. Everybody kept saying it's a publicity stunt by him. And yeah, I think on the Mets' part, in the beginning, sure, it was definitely a publicity stunt. Was it? Could you label it as a joke in the beginning? Absolutely, because it was ridiculous when it first happened. But Tebow's intentions were genuine. He works hard. He rides the buses. He's one of the guys, and he's committed to make this work. So just from that standpoint alone, I have got no problem with Tim Tebow having a professional baseball career. I wish him the best of luck. I will say this, if Tim Tebow does make it up as a September call-up after all of the outfielders that Brody signed, then we have a lot, we have much bigger problems than whether Tim Tebow is in it for the publicity or not.
Mike, well, I mean, he got invited to Major League Camp. What if he makes the team?
After what John said, I can't add any more. He truly is the litmus paper in the room. But like what Rich said, look, there's a lot of people on planet Earth who can't say they batted .273 in 84 double-A games. You know, there's a lot of people who can't say that. This is a situation that's easily readily available for mockery, but I won't go there. It is what it is. If he wasn't with the Mets, he'd definitely be somewhere else. So, you know, more power to him, you know, and like John says, if he actually makes the Mets one day, that just, well, that says a lot.
Now, listen, though, you know, like I said, though, let's just throw it out there, Rich. Tim Tebow is in Major League Camp, and what if Tim Tebow is a Major League phenom?
So you mean he hits 500 in spring training and they have to make a decision, something like that?
Like the natural.
Yeah.
Well, I think what they would do.
Bah, bah, bah.
There you go. I think if he hit 750 this spring, he still wouldn't make the team. I think what they would say is, you know, it's new to you, so AAA. And if you do well in AAA,
Super
we'll talk
two,
about
baby.
It.
Super two.
So yeah, there you go. So that's what I think. I think really, I don't care what he does in spring training. He has no chance of making the team. And the best he can hope for is to, you know, skip the second half of AA, so to speak, and start the season at AAA, which probably won't happen. But if he had a great spring, that's maybe they would. Because they know. The guy's not major league ready now. And, you can
right.
be a flash in the pan and have a great spring for a month. But that's not – on a team that intends to contend, you're not going to give an outfield spot, a bench spot to a guy who has had, 84 AA at-bats prior to spring training. It's just not going to happen. So I think the best he can hope for is a great spring. He starts the season at AAA. I think the more likely scenario that we're all thinking about is he has an average spring training. He hits maybe 240, against major league pitching. He goes to AA and see what happens.
And I'll finish
but once
with
he does
this,
get to AAA, he's gonna hit a home run in his first AAA at bat.
Right, that's right.
Because that's what he's done at every level.
It's true. And I was just looking at this video of him. I mean, he's definitely raking when he connects with that fastball over the plate. Along with Pete Alonso in this this tweeted GIF/video. And I'll finish with this, and I'll let you speak again, John. Unlike Alderson, who stated in no uncertain terms last spring that he expected Tebow to play in the big leagues, Callaway offered a more measured take, referring how difficult it is for any player to achieve that goal. There have been so few major league players in the history of the game since the mid-1800s, Callaway said. To predict anybody who's going to play in the major leagues is tough for me, but I know that Tim Tebow on a daily basis is going to do everything he can to put himself in the best position to play in the big league. Now, with everything that we've talked about, I don't think, I think that is some truth. It's not just a cliche what he's saying.
Absolutely, and it goes back to what Rich said about the value of Tebow. Even if he provides no value on a major league box score anytime soon, or if at all, he's going to provide an example of what it takes to work hard to try to get to the major leagues. Even if a prospect coming up lockers next to Tebow and thinks, man, this guy has very little chance to make the major leagues, but he's not giving up. What's my excuse? And if that happens with one Mets minor leaguer and puts that minor leaguer on a path from suspect to prospect, then maybe it will all be worth it.
And, Mike, I'll leave you with this. Tebow on a pop culture level, let's think about, what Bo Jackson meant as a multi-sport athlete. I'm not comparing Tim Tebow to Bo Jackson here, because Bo Jackson unfortunately got ripped from our hearts because of a terrible injury. But it is interesting the way Tebow has been able to stay within the public purview. And like we're talking about, he's an inspiration to many people. He's going to keep on fighting.
Was that directed to me?
Yeah, no, Mike, go ahead. I thought you heard
that. You're right. No, you're absolutely right. I have nothing more to add. I mean, he's a great story to many people. I don't want to deny that deny anybody that. I really don't. So it's best that I just, I accept it for where it is. I have no problem with it. And if he outplays the next guy, fine. And if he doesn't, that's the nature of the beast. That's the way I look at it. I'm a pragmatic guy, and no more, no less.
And with that, I will carry us over to our last word. And there could be so many in the middle of the spring or the middle of the winter as we get some sleep on my air conditioning. Rich, where do you go with in our first spring training special, the last word?
Well, I can't come up with one, so I'm going to do two words. Let's go. I'm ready. Saturday I will be glued to the TV. I'm going to be glued to the hot stoves on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week. I'm going to be glued to all those. And I know the games don't count, but there are, like we talked about, there are some storylines, the multiplicity of players for certain positions. I want to see how that plays out. I can't wait to get this thing going. I'm happy about all the roster turnover. Sometimes activity doesn't mean results, but hopefully in this case it does. So I am really pumped to get this thing going, so let's go.
Mike, how about you?
I'm like Rich. I can't narrow this down to one word, so I'm going to say price-worthy. John brought it up. We paid a stiff price in prospects this offseason. Sorry to see particularly two of them go. So I want to see this work out. That's what I really want to say. I want to see this work out. Price-worthy.
And, John, before you give us your last word, please give us your shameless plug.
Shameless plug, MetStradamusBlog.com on the Sports Daily Network. Sunday nights on now it's not WLIE anymore, but it's 5:40 a.m. I think it's a Bollywood station now, but we do a sports show at 7 o'clock on 5:40. No, seriously, I think it's a Bollywood station. But 5:40 a.m., 7:02, I am on with the Baseball Report every week, so if you care to join me there, feel free. And also the Burger Ball podcast, which has started back up this season, and I promise I will have all of you guys on at some point. And thank you for having me on, as always. These are my last words. McNeil, Conforto, Syndergaard, Alonso, Diaz. More than anybody, to me, those five will tell the story of the New York Mets season.
I don't know how I can top that last word. All I will say, and I will go back to what we always say with this team, you got to believe. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Thanks for listening. Spring training special is over, and the only way to finish is, Rich.
Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets, everybody. John, thank you for joining us. Mike, take care. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Good night, everybody.